So back to... Wait a minute. You're holding your arm.
No, I'm saying, here we go. The five critical estate planning documents.
Four now.
The HIPAA release we've covered.
Right.
Ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum last week. So we're on to...
Wills. Let's begin with the number one. Will. Everybody, Pete, mm-hmm. when they hear estate planning or an estate document, they don't think HIPAA. They don't think living will. They don't think POA for property and health. They think will.
Correct.
Why don't you talk to us a little bit about what a will is?
Okay. A will is simply, in its rudimentary form, nothing more than a letter to the probate judge saying how you want your property distributed. Simple as that. And, of course, you've selected who's going to manage that, called personal representative now. In the past, it's been called executor. But that's the person that has the authority then, under the terms of the will, to sign your name and transfer your property to the folks that you want it to go to.
Since we're listened to throughout the nation, is every state call them personal representatives, or do some still call them executors or executrix or something like that?
I think some do. The personal representative term comes from the Uniform Probate Code, which has been adopted, I believe, now in 40 states, and then variations of that in the others.
Okay, so some listeners may still refer to it as executor or executrix.
Correct.
We call it personal representative.
Yes, that's the new term.
Okay, so the will is, I like how you word that, because now it's easy to understand. People mm-hmm. get, when people hear the word, like, trust, they think it's just complex thing. And I tell them, it's just a piece of paper. but a will, the way you explain it, it's true. It's a letter. It's you just saying to the judge, hey, Your Honor, this is my stuff. Mm-hmm. And here's who I want to get it. Please make sure it goes this way. Is that
That's correct.
A fair representation?
Yeah, that really is. And it has other things in it, such as if there are minor children who the parents would like to have named as guardians in the event that both of them are gone. It may have some other provisions in terms of how people receive the property, maybe not just outright, but maybe it's in trusts or minors. It may go to them under a Uniform Transfer to Minors Act because they're underage and can't receive. So it can have other components. But
can you have, without creating a trust, could you have the will say something to the effect of, I would like, again, I don't have children, but I have a lot of friends, and... Let's say I wanted to leave some of my firearms to my friends. Could I say something to the effect of, well, I would like to leave this particular firearm to Richard, unless Richard, prior to my death, also purchased, because I don't want to name the guns, but there's one gun that he likes, but he's thinking of buying one. So could I get to that specificity and say, I would like to leave this firearm to Richard unless he already has one. If he does, I would like to leave it then to Rob. Or does that get too advanced for a will?
Well, fundamentally, no, you can do that. The issue, though, is guns are subject to federal law, under the Firearms Act, Federal Firearms Act, and so there may be some other restrictions and considerations. So if Richard perhaps has a felony conviction on his record, he's not allowed to own a firearm.
Okay, I was using a firearm as an example, so now we're getting into a little bit of the depth that a quality estate planning attorney will do for someone with firearms, because I did hear once on a radio show I was listening to, there's a big bang of someone moving, but where someone said you may need a firearms trust.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, maybe that's something we can talk about after. Let's get back and not use firearms as an example. Could I say I would like to leave my hot tub to Richard unless Richard has one, then I would like to leave it to someone else? Or if you want to get into that type of specificity, do you need a deeper document than a will?
No, you can cover all of that in a will. So you do have the opportunity to say what and how people receive property, and if it's the hot tub, and if there's a other consideration before you can actually receive it, then that can be put in the will, and that would be followed. So we can do that. You can do that with most anything that you want. And so you can the issue really is, when you start parsing it out like that, can someone actually follow your direction? Is it possible? And that really becomes a consideration. And when people start doing their own wills, that's really the big issue, because And I've litigated those, and sometimes the decedent in that case, the person that's died, is very clear about what they want to happen. But then third parties coming along, it's ambiguous at best, and so we can't tell. And so at that point, then we have, through the probate process, then the judge is ultimately going to decide what was intended, if they can, in fact, figure it out.
Well, what if somebody passes away intestate now?
Okay.
That's without a will.
Yep, that's what that term means.
And now there's all this property, firearms, a hot tub, a dog, a house, all the items. I'm describing my homestead here.
You have a hot tub?
Yeah. Do you want it?
He can leave it to you in the will.
Do you have one to get rid of?
Yeah.
Oh.
Came with the house.
Does
I don't use
work?
It. Yeah.
Oh, I'd absolutely take it.
Okay, we got that covered.
Sold!
Thanks for tuning in. But the hot tub's gone.
But no, what I'm getting at, because...
Swap shop.
What I'm getting at here, Pete, is how would... Because most people don't have a will, let's face it.
Well, they do, actually.
The state of Colorado will decide. That's right. What I'm trying to get at. Do they get down to the level of every single piece of personal property the government will pass on to someone, or how does that work?
Well,
if you don't have a will?
The every state has written a will for those people who haven't gone to the trouble to write their own. It's called intestacy. The intestacy laws are laws of descent and distribution, which cover that. And basically it says that if you die without a will, it goes to what the state has determined is the proper people to receive it. So an example, if you're married and have no children, then, at least in Colorado, the first $200,000 goes to your spouse, and the balance is split between your parents and your spouse.
$200,000 of cash or $200,000 of everything?
$200,000 of value composed of whatever property might be there. And so, most people would think that, no, it would just go to my spouse. Well, no. The individual state laws will provide very often something different than what's intended. But that's the default if someone doesn't draw their own will.
And that's, I think, a lot of married people think, oh, we don't need a will because if I die, my wife gets everything, or if she dies, I get everything. But what you're saying in Colorado, no. So every listener in every state needs to know their intestacy laws or put a will together, because in Colorado, your spouse will get the first $200,000 of items of value, and then everything else has to be split with the parents and the spouse.
Correct.
Now, just to clarify a little bit, and maybe I'm stepping on your toes because you're about to say this, we're only talking about assets that didn't pass another way through some sort
by right
of beneficiary
of law.
Or by title. So if you've got you own the home as joint tenants with your spouse now has that property. That isn't going to be part of the $200,000 in that rule. It's only the things that are going through the probate.
Right.
Process.
I was talking about all the stuff inside my house.
Right.
So you're correct. And again, I don't have a spouse, so my situation would be a little different. But for those of you who are married, such as both Pete and Chris here, most of your items probably are owned jointly already and are going to pass either by beneficiary form or right of law. Is that safe to say?
Well, it may be safe with Chris, I don't know.
Not everybody.
But my experience is that, at least in a first marriage, most of the assets are held in joint tenancy with right of survivorship, which means at the death of one, the other ends up owning it all, or the beneficiary designation. So more often than not, there is no probate at the first death of a couple with their first marriage. Now, second marriages, whole different story. Because typically the assets will be segregated to some extent, not always, but very often they are. And so the will control the property that is retained in the name of the decedent, that is in their name only with no joint owner and no beneficiary designation. So in those cases, very often there is a probate if they haven't made other arrangements.
Interesting. Okay. So another question I'm always asked, and I know Chris has a question too, but another question that I'm always asked, can they do it themselves either by writing a simple letter and having it witnessed? Can they download these forms from websites, or do they need to meet with an attorney to put a will together?
The answer to that is twofold. The first part was, can they write their own will and have it witnessed? The wills in most states If it's a do-it-yourself will and they're not using a pre-printed form or something off the internet, the will has to be at least two, maybe three witnesses, depending on state law. Otherwise, they don't need witnesses if they write the will in their own handwriting, not on a computer, but in their own handwriting, date and sign it. It's called a holographic will, and that will be enforceable. But if they've typed it on the computer, signed it and dated it, and no witnesses, it will not be valid. So you've got to be very careful. As for the pre-printed forms, or now we have them where you can download them off the internet through various services. Actually, I haven't seen all the forms, but the ones I've seen are really quite good. Where the problem arises is what goes in the blanks in those forms. And the probate estate that I made the most money on was one where a lady did it herself. She filled in the blanks, no children, but she didn't care for her siblings at all, left them out entirely and left it all to a friend of hers. They challenged the will because it was ambiguous what she wrote. And the way that I talk to people about it is we'll have a conversation and we'll talk, and you pretty well know where I'm going, how I'm going to finish it, and sometimes you'll even finish a sentence for me. And this is sort of generically. People will very often write in the same way they talk, which is a lack of clarity in terms of the specifics and the details of the disposition of the property, and that's where the ambiguity comes, and that opens it up for challenge. Attorneys are trained to write precisely because that's just what we do all through our training and practice, so that we avoid the ambiguity in most cases. In fact, I would say substantially all the cases, so that there's clarity there, so that there's no room to really argue about what was really meant. So the forms themselves are excellent. It's how people fill in the blanks in the forms that creates problems.
Can someone download one of these wills, fill it in, and then go to attorney and have them proof it? Is that less expensive? Is that a savings or not?
Well, let me explain it this way, because that does happen occasionally. Someone brings me a document they've done themselves, and we'll just leave it at a will. Once I pick that up and look at it, I have full liability for whatever happens. And so, but they only want to pay me for looking at what they did. So I get to assume the full liability and responsibility. Now they say, okay, we're not going to sue you if something's wrong. Well, it's not them. It's their children or the people who would inherit who would be suing me because it's not clear or something's wrong with it. And most of the time when I look at these, they have to really be rewritten for clarity. You can't just tweak it here and there just because, I mean, and it's not a criticism, folks. It's just the way that we communicate these days and probably always have. And the written word is used less and less these days. We're using the text shorthand. And so it's become a lost art to write precisely and clearly. And so if I'm going to take the full liability, it's like, you know, when you buy a casualty insurance policy. If I write my own policy, will you only charge me a little bit of premium, or are you going to charge me for the risk? Well, as an insurance company, you'll charge for the risk.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I have a question. If a will is a sufficient document to detail your desires for guardianship of minors.
Yes.
So is there another more substantial, robust document for this, or is will totally the place where you would describe this?
Well, the will, you can designate a guardian for your minor children without mm-hmm. a will, but the will is the most common place for it. Keeping in mind that is your, I'll say, nomination. The probate court always retains the right to appoint who they think is best, and the standard is what's in the best interest of the child. So if the people you named, say, have been recently convicted of child abuse, the court is not going to appoint them as guardian for your children.
And I never realized that. Well, it makes sense the way you worded it, but I'm sitting here thinking, what if you have a husband and wife, a couple, and they have a child, and for a variety of reasons, they particularly don't care for their families. So they want to name their very good friend as the guardian for their child, and they do, and then the couple passes away. From the way you've described it, you're saying the family has a right to have a judge force a change of the parents. So nobody knows better than the parents who should raise the kids. That just doesn't seem fair.
Well, the court is going to, in order for the guardian to be appointed, the court is the one that appoints the guardian. And this is through the probate process that we talked about a few weeks ago. The court always retains the right to do what's in the best interest of the child. They give great weight to what the parents have expressed. And so very often, I've never had one where the court did not appoint the guardian that was nominated by the parent.
Okay, that explains it. So the will is not legally binding in that sense. Again, back to your analogy that a will is just a letter to the judge. It's just a letter where the parent said, and oh, by the way, judge, when you come to naming someone to raise our children, here's who we feel it should be. Right. Rather than a legally binding document like a beneficiary designation that says, I want this person to inherit my account.
That's correct.
Okay.
The judge always retains that right.
Did you know that?
Vaguely. I didn't know it and as cleanly and precisely as Peter has worded it, which
this is why we fired Devin and bought him up.
Yes.
Well, I thought it was for my ability to knowledge of 1970 songs.
And Devin, if you're listening, you know I'm just joking. I'm teasing you. I don't know if she listens anymore.
I doubt it.
I got to text her, find out how she's doing. Her son's supposed to come help me around the house and take care of Corbett, so I got to get him coming over.
Okay, then.
To talk about something like squirrel, something totally off, off base here. But, yeah, he's going to come help me around the house and take care of my dog. But anyways, back to this will. I didn't realize that. So it is more of a suggestion by the parents. This is who we want to take care of our child. If the parent does not name guardianship in a will because they don't have a will, obviously I'm sure states have anticipated that and have in statute a lineage of who would be asked to raise the kids. Do you know how that lineage works, or is it can it be just someone totally random the court names?
Well, I don't know that there is a hierarchy of people eligible, but when they don't have a will and no separate document nominating a guardian, then the court is going to, and typically the family will step forward and say, we want to be the guardian. It'll be somebody that's related to the decedent. Very often, and they'll step up, and there could be a fight over it, but the court is ultimately going to decide who is going to be the best guardian in the best interest of that child. And so it can lead to that. The child, unfortunately, may end up in foster care for a while until that is resolved, or maybe not. If parents are die in an auto accident and the children are left surviving, then very often the grandparents or siblings will come in and care for the children until the court appoints a guardian.
Okay. So to summarize, if I understand everything correctly, a will is the best analogy, and I love this analogy. It's essentially a letter, even though it's not written like a letter, but it's essentially a letter from you to a judge who is going to be presiding over your estate at your passing, where you're kind of making suggestions and thoughts and direction of what you want done with your personal property as well as your minor children.
Right, and the will has no legal effect until it's entered into the probate process.
Okay, then...
And just as a reminder to people, we've talked about this before, that letter that you've written to the judge becomes public information.
Right, becomes public
record. So every, before you die, it's not, because it's probably stashed somewhere in a private location. It's not like you file it ahead of time. But once it gets submitted into the process, that's all public record and can be read. That's why we know all about Elvis Presley's will and James Gandolfini's will and that sort of thing, because that is public record at this point.
Right. So in addition, Pete, from what you're saying is it's a document that everybody should have. It can be done via online documents, but you find the online documents to be thoroughly put together. The issue is the people filling them in still fill them in wrong, even though they think they're filling them in right.
Or too vaguely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where an attorney can add specificity.
Exactly.
Okay. And would you say, out of all the five documents we're going to talk about, to me, the will seems like the most important, and I don't want to speak for you, but is it an important document?
Well, sure it is. If you want to have your property distributed different than what the state has provided, then yes, absolutely, it becomes a very important document. But I think in terms of prioritizing, I think really the powers of attorney are much more important to the folks themselves, because remember, they're dead. So it's just where their property goes, where the power of attorney, medical or financial, is going to control the assets in their life.
Perfect, then. That'll be an excellent lead-in. When we come back, we're going to talk about the second and third document, power of attorney for property and power of attorney for health care. I will say, in our own office, and you and I have spoken about this before, Pete, I try to get everybody who comes in and works with us to have a power of attorney for property. Yep. I also encourage all four other documents, but I try to get them to understand, excuse me, I'm here to help you and you may be working with me. But if you become incapacitated, unable to take care of yourself via a disease or an accident or some other mechanism where you are unable to help yourself, if someone else comes in here and wants access to your money, even if it's for your care, I have no right, even if I know that person, I have no right to release money or act on their direction without a power of attorney for property.
Exactly.
So that is a very important document. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about how a power of attorney for property works and how a power of attorney for healthcare works when we come back at the top of the third segment.